Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet, is a proud sponsor of Pure Dog Talk. Trupanion invites you to sign up for their breeder support program by clicking the link on our partner page at puredogtalk.com. Here, breeders can access immediate transitional insurance coverage for new litters going home, puppy kits, one-on-one support, and a whole lot more, all at no cost to you. Sign up on our partner page today and mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are back on the Veterinary Voice with Dr. Marty Greer. And we're doing sort of a cool half veterinary voice, half advocate's voice. Marty's going to wear one of her many extra hats today as a board member for the National Animal Interest Alliance and a veterinarian, talking about the importation of quote-unquote rescue dogs and the very, very real dangers that those present for our pets.
Yes, and it's increasingly a hot topic, so we really need to cover this.
Okay, and as I mentioned just a minute ago off air, brucellosis just arrived in your home state, so that is terrifying.
Indeed it is. So there was just a group of Korean meat dogs brought into Wisconsin this week, the last week of March, and it was discovered that out of 26 of the dogs, two tested positive for brucellosis. I'm not sure exactly how they made the determination that they should test, if there was some clinical sign or not. Apparently they're normal and healthy, but I don't know if they were just automatically testing or exactly what was going on. But two out of the 26 have tested positive. The problem is, by the time they realized they were positive, they'd already started to commingle them with other dogs. So now they have 100 dogs that they need to quarantine. So now they're asking the public to come in and get some of the dogs that were previous at the shelters out of the shelters so that they have room for the quarantine and the length of time that they're going to need to hold these dogs, because it's going to require retesting roughly every 30 days.
Right.
Typically, they do tests three times over 30-day intervals up to 90 days to determine these dogs' status for brucellosis, if it'll revert to a negative status, if it'll become positive in more dogs. So far, it's two, but that doesn't mean it's going to stay at two.
And brucellosis, I think we really need to stick a pin in this one, and we're going to get to several other diseases that are also deadly. But brucellosis for breeders particularly, this can wipe out your entire kennel.
Yes, it can. Once you have brucellosis diagnosed in any of your dogs, in most states, the state becomes involved. You don't get to make decisions. The state comes in, the state veterinarian starts to make decisions about what happens to your dog's future. So that means they start testing everyone in the kennel. They start isolating you. You can't sell dogs. You can't move dogs in. You can't move dogs out. Everybody that's there is locked down. They typically, as I said before, come in every 30 days and retest. And if you have a dog that's persistently positive, the general recommendation is to euthanize it. Spaying and neutering does not eliminate the disease from their body. So
right. The
problem is your 40-year breeding program can be wiped out with one misstep by bringing the wrong dog into your facility.
Right. To me, as scary as all the other ones are, that's the one that strikes absolute cold fear in my heart.
Right. You know, influenza is bad, rabies is bad, but it doesn't wipe out your whole breeding program the
right.
way this will. So that's the truly startling thing, is that you don't get to make those decisions. The state does, and they can come in and literally quarantine you and euthanize everything in your facility. So where do you go from there? What happens? Your heart is broken. Your breeding program is destroyed. What do you do after that? You can't recover from this.
No.
And I've talked with clients that have had brucellosis in their kennels, and it's very, very devastating to them. I've actually had one patient here that was brucellosis positive. He was here once, and he was invited not to come back.
Right.
And I invited the client not to come back for other pets as well, because I couldn't afford to have brucellosis on our facility.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, the problem is it's not just spread venereally, and that's what most people think, is it's only spread by breeding, where there's actually a mating that takes place. And unfortunately, that's not the case. So brucellosis can be spread through any body fluid. So it can be a placenta, it can be a puppy that's aborted, it can be urine, it can be blood, it can be coughing, barking at each other, things like that can spread brucellosis. And the other big concern is that it is a zoonotic disease, meaning that people can get it as well.
Okay, now that might actually be new information to me. Wow.
Yes, it's zoonotic. It's spread to people. And, you know, if you've got a dog that's aborting a litter, you know, she's having a miscarriage, you're cleaning up after her and you're not wearing gloves, you were exposed. If you've got newborn puppies that are sick and you're handling them, you're exposed. You've now exposed your veterinary clinic, their staff, their doctors. So this can spread, and it doesn't happen frequently in people, but it does occur. When I was in vet school, I worked as a phlebotomist drawing blood on patients at a human hospital for my summer job, and one of the patients I was drawing blood on was a veterinarian that had brucellosis. Wow. So I was drawing blood cultures every 30 minutes on this poor guy, so I'm in his room every 30 minutes poking him in the arm for another blood culture, another blood culture, another blood culture. So it's called undulant fever in people because it never goes away. Once you get it, it lives in your bone marrow, and it will replicate there and stay in your macrophages. And for the rest of your life, you will have times that you will have undulant fever, meaning a rising and falling of a fever, and it's flu-like symptoms, fever, chills, you feel really crummy. Then it gets better, then it goes away. But you can't ever eliminate it from your body. So it's a big deal. That's one of the biggest concerns. And, of course, the other worry is that if you have young women working at your facility, if you have this, your concern is that they may miscarry a baby, they may end up with brucellosis, and it may interfere with their future fertility as well. So most people that work in kennels are young women.
Yeah.
And we just don't want to take a chance on that.
Well, lots of things we don't want to take a chance on. But you have just sort of blown up my brain, and wow. So I guess circling back to our conversation, it's a really big deal that these rescues are bringing in these poor, sad, tragic, whatever, you know, no matter, as they say, how well intentioned these people are, they are putting us and our dogs at risk.
Right. So they're bringing in animals with diseases that sometimes we know about, like brucellosis, but don't typically test for. It's not required as an import test. The only thing required to import a dog or cat to the U.S. is rabies. It's different for birds. Birds do have some requirements through USDA, but Center for Disease Control, CDC, is what manages the import of dogs and cats. So, number one, we have dogs and cats that may come in with diseases that we know about. Two, we may have exotic diseases coming into the United States for things that we have never seen as veterinarians. So it's difficult for us to diagnose. We've seen leishmaniasis come in, babesia. I mean, there's been a lot of diseases that have come in. So some of those are coming in. We don't know about them. Screwworms have been a concern across the border between Texas and Mexico. We've eliminated some of those diseases in the U.S., but we're very vulnerable because our borders are so open, both Canada and Mexico, as well as any other imported dogs. And we're seeing a lot of dogs right now coming in from Korea as Korean meat dogs, from Eastern Europe as breeding dogs. That's, to me, really fascinating, the number of Eastern European imports. Mm-hmm. Russia and some of the other countries are exporting dogs to our country at very high numbers. So we're seeing some mycoplasmas come in with those that are interfering with our breeding populations. But we're seeing rabies. Rabies has come into the country three times with dogs with falsified rabies certificates. People have died from those things. There was a
right.
veteran that died from rabies after an exposure to a rabid dog. So there's scary things. And then there's diseases that are coming in with resistance to bacteria, so our antibiotics aren't going to work on them. So there's just a whole array of concerns. And people are going on vacation to Puerto Rico or one of the islands, and they're finding sado dogs, street dogs that they're bringing in and rescuing. People are bringing in dogs. Around 300,000 dogs a year, they think, are coming into the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
but we don't really know numbers for sure because many of them are coming in without import oversight. So they're right. coming in with private pilots, they're coming in as pet dogs, they're coming in a lot of different ways. So it's becoming very disturbing. We're going to be in trouble here.
Well, I think we are in trouble. You know, we have, what is it, the new kind of distemper. We were just reading about this. There's a completely different type of distemper, Asia 1, that right. we had never seen this particular type of distemper. And our vaccines don't treat it. And this, we've talked on our podcast already about canine influenza and the horrors that happen there. But when you start talking about distemper, this is a deadly disease.
Right. And a lot of people have let down their guards on vaccinating. They've assumed that distemper's been eliminated from our dog population, and it hasn't been. So we need to keep our dogs current on their vaccinations. The question is a three-year frequency enough to keep the dog's immunity high? And there was some interesting insights into the materials, but we need to keep about 95% of our population well vaccinated to get, quote-unquote, herd immunity. In other words, that's a way to keep
mm-hmm.
disease that gets exposed from one dog that's infected to a dog that's naive to that disease, if we don't have 95% of the dogs around that dog protected, then it's going to spread like the measles has on the human side. And that
right.
was the comparison was it's around 73% of the people that are currently immunized for measles. So when there's a measles outbreak, it becomes truly a significant disease. And actually, measles can affect people as well. There were at one time, and I don't know if it's still present or not, but at one time there was a thought that there might be a relationship between measles and MS. I think it was
MS, right.
Yeah. So that's another thing that you kind of start to worry about. And
mm-hmm.
we don't know if this influenza, the most recent outbreak of the 2015 outbreak, was avian in origin from the eastern countries, Korea and those areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the question is, because it mutated from a bird to a dog, can it further mutate from a bird to a human or a dog to a human?
Mm-hmm.
So we do need to take our vaccination protocol seriously. And if your dog has any exposure to other dogs at the dog park or doggy daycare or boarding or grooming, any place that the dog is going, they need to be vaccinated. They need to be current on distemper, current on parvo, and current on influenza, because we're seeing those being really serious diseases.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Hey, listeners, give me a minute. Join me. We're going to visit with Cheryl Kreitzer from showdogswithaz.org. And she has some great information for you about this new resource that's available to the worldwide purebred dog community.
Thank you for having me, Laura. Well, one of the things that I wanted to touch on is that AKC has their AKC.org. UKC has their UKC site. All of the kennel clubs have these great resources for people in our community to go and look at. One of the things I wanted to do was bring all of the kennel clubs, all of the community into an experience where they can all get together. The website that I've built is across all of that, and it translates instantly with a click of a button at the top of it.
So I can learn about the Japanese Kennel Club and members in Japan who have a Shiba that I want to buy, right?
Yes, you can. And you can even visit our instant chat and talk to them instantaneously, because it will translate as you talk. Or you can visit the forum and you can translate that as well.
Amazing. I love it. All right, listeners, check out showdogswithaz.org. This article, and I'll hopefully be able to use this article in the blog post, or at least sections of it, is fascinating, talking about distemper. And again, I knew this, but seeing it in black and white, you know what I'm saying? Like leptospirosis is transmitted by the wildlife population.
Right. So raccoons and a lot of other critters.
Mm-hmm.
And those are animals that we don't really think much about, but they're in our backyards at night.
Right.
They're in our garbage cans.
Skunks, yeah.
Skunks, fox, raccoon. All those animals are living very comfortably in our urban environments. So we can't make the assumption that just because we live in town that we don't have those. We have deer. You know, I drive through town and there's deer in the town that I live in.
Right.
So it's not just that you live in the country and you have those things. It's out in the general population.
Well, and I think, you know, the important piece, and we talked about it some when we were talking about on the podcast about leptospirosis, the same thing. Having a skunk living underneath your house, which happens to many of us in many environments, you're not going to be able to vaccinate that thing. So you have to be able to vaccinate and stay on top of the vaccinations and find that balance, right? That balance between I don't want to shoot my dog every year and I need to protect its life. So that, I think, is the fine line we're starting to struggle with.
Right. And our dogs are the canary in the mine shaft. Our dogs are the ones that keep us this barrier between the wildlife and us. So
mm-hmm.
we need to pay attention to that, and we need to make sure that we're not trying to cheat the system and say, well, I don't really want to get a rabies vaccination for my dog. You know, there are places that it's okay to exempt a dog, but it's pretty limited. I have clients that want me to exempt them, and I just, in my professional opinion, it's not always appropriate. So we have to be really careful with those things. So don't try to cheat the system, because you're going to be the one, or your dog may be the one that pays for that. If your dog is exposed to an animal that's rabid and not current on vaccinations, that's going to mean a quarantine, and that may mean euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. A rabies vaccination every 3 years, there's a very, very low risk for that. There's very low risks to influenza vaccinations. And, yeah, we've been doing distemper vaccinations every 3 years since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our dogs, when we do titers, do come back protected, but not all of them.
Right.
So that's why we've still got to be vigilant And we can't make the assumption that if our dog got vaccinated as a baby and then again at 15 months, that they're good for the rest of their life. We don't know which dogs are falling through the cracks and which ones aren't without testing. So either titer or booster on your distemper. The client who sent me the article that we're hoping to be able to share, her veterinarian just lost 2 7-year-old dogs to canine distemper from a wildlife exposure. And I have a colleague in New Hampshire that just had an outbreak of distemper in his community as well. So
wow.
This isn't fake news. This is right. The real thing. These are real dogs.
This is real facts. Know the facts, people.
Right. These are real things happening.
Yeah. And so back to, again, circling back to the point of this, the importation of quote-unquote rescue dogs from around the globe and impoverished countries and trying to do a good thing and in the process doing a very bad thing. Because the Asia 1 strain of canine distemper, our dogs, even if they're vaccinated, don't have any immunity to.
Yeah, it's unclear whether they're going to have full immunity or not.
Okay.
So that's a big question.
Okay.
But there are other ways that we can help the animals that are in unfortunate circumstances by trying to educate the people in the countries where these dogs are, trying to move them into better facilities. Now, some of the dogs that are coming in under the pretense of being Korean meat dogs, I can't believe some of them are. They're very small breed dogs, and they're not really what one would expect to utilize in the food chain, shall we say. You know, a Sheltie is probably not the size dog that you're going to expect, and that was what the dog that came in with the Asia 1 distemper was a Sheltie-like dog. So we have to look really carefully at what's going on, and there are really significant movements. National Animal Interest Alliance is working on this.
Right.
USDA and CDC are working on improving the regulations. But people still try to cheat them and smuggle things in and falsify certificates. And that's just not smart. You know, there's nothing good about trying to cheat the system and ending up with an outbreak.
So what is our recommendation to our listeners if you want to do your part to keep your dogs and yourself safe from imported scary stuff, rabies, canine distemper, canine influenza, brucellosis? What should you be doing?
You should, first of all, keep your own pets' vaccinations up to date or titer so that you're sure that they're current. Don't cheat the system. Don't try to sneak in a dog. Don't try to smuggle in anything. A number of years ago, our family went over to England and Wales for a visit. Our children had been over there for an overseas semester of college. And one of the things that you have to fill out on the card when you're on the airplane on the flight back is whether you've been around livestock.
Mm.
We'd been to a sheep show. We'd been to the Gower. We'd walked around out in the areas where the manure was. And I woke up from sleeping, and my husband had filled out the card, and he had marked, no, we hadn't been there. And I said, no, we can't do that. So I tore up the card. I started it over. He's like, oh, I don't want to have to go through that other line. So I said, well, too bad, so sad. We're veterinarians. If we bring back foot and mouth disease, because it was currently an outbreak situation in those countries, I said, do you want to be the person in the news that said these two veterinarians brought foot and mouth disease to the U.S.? So I remarked the card. We got in the line. And you know what? It's a really tiny little short line. And all they do is take off your shoes, disinfect them, and give them back to you. It's not a big deal. But you need to be honest with your government. Don't try to cheat by bringing in dogs or other wildlife that are unreported. I mean, people smuggle in birds and they smuggle in other kinds of wildlife. Don't do those things. It's just not smart. It's just not safe. So help other organizations to keep the animals in their own native countries. And there are certainly ways that you can do that without importing animals. Don't sneak them in on a private plane. Just don't try to cheat the system.
Right.
Because it's really dangerous for our wildlife and our personal pets. So we have to be aware of that, and we need to follow rules.
And what can our listeners do to help you guys at NAIA? Because I know there is legislation afoot, shall we say.
There is. The National Animal Interest Alliance has a great website. They've got a very educational website. They've got a place that you can call and donate, or you can go to the website and click on the donate button and help fund those pieces of legislation. You can help work with your personal local legislators. So meet them, meet with them, let them know that you're a constituent, let them know how to get a hold of you and that you do understand some of the concerns and problems in the legislation that they're trying to make decisions on. So introduce yourself as a dog breeder, as a dog person. Let them know you're there to help them out because they want your opinion when they are trying to make decisions. You can typically meet with one of their aides, and they're very helpful in getting that piece of information to the legislator that you're working with, whether it's your local or your national, you know, if it's your senator, your state representative, whoever they happen to be. Let them know who you are, and that you're there to help them with decisions.
Right. And I think that that's something that was, as I sort of started interacting with NAIA over the last couple of years, really, really an important light bulb moment for me. We as dog breeders, as dog fanciers, are subject matter experts. And that is what anyone in elected office wants, is a subject matter expert, not someone who pretends they are from some
other
random organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so take a stand and let them know, because you are a subject matter expert and you are voting for them or not voting for them. So let them know that you really do have some great input for them, and they can use NAIA's shelter dog program,
right,
a lot of their other resources as resources for them when they're looking for information on model legislation and
right,
other information that they're trying to work through. They have a big job. They have many, many pieces of legislation every year. So the more you can help them to get through it and to streamline that, and the more science-based you can show your argument, the better they like it. They don't want to make emotional decisions. They want to make science-based decisions, so they need that help.
Absolutely. And NAIA Trust, which is a great repository, if you will, of
yes,
assistance and donations, because that's what is, my understanding, is involved in actually funding legislative battles, yes?
Yeah, so you can join their list and you'll get information when there's legislation pending in your states. There's a lot of great resources that they have. So take a look at that website and sign up, join us. Our conference is coming up at the end of August, August 26th to the 27th, and the topics will be babies. I'm not sure any more detail than that at this point, but there will be more information coming. So look at coming to the conference. It's in Orlando, and it's an outstanding conference. You'll come back with your head just swimming with great ideas.
It's true. I've been the last couple of years, and it has been quite literally eye-opening and mind-boggling.
Well, good. We want everybody to have a little bit better information when they leave this podcast, when they leave our conference. I want them to have something to go home and think about and realize that they're just a little smarter than they were the day before.
That's my goal every single day, man.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Marty. I sure appreciate your time, and looking forward to next month's conversation on the Veterinary Voice.
Thank you.
Two Cities Kennel Club and the surrounding community were dramatically impacted by the devastating campfire last fall. The club will hold a two-day raffle at its show to raise funds for a new Yuba County AKC Reunite disaster trailer. Each AKC Pet Disaster Relief Trailer is stocked with essential, non-perishable supplies needed to set up and provide safe sheltering options for pets during an evacuation. The tragedy of last year's fires reinforced the need for a trailer in Northern California. To donate items to the raffle or to donate directly to this critically important disaster relief trailer, go to the events section of the Pure Dog Talk Facebook page for contact information. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.